Okay, Arthur Schwartz fans, you can calm down. He is back this week live with us on the radio. It's time to say good morning to Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. Good morning, Arthur.
I don't know what you ran last week.
I ran...
People, I don't know. They were not happy.
Well, especially when I put it up on demand, if you're not there, I say, Arthur's got this week off. He'll be back next week. And I love the emails like that. I mean, people really look forward to this weekly
thing. Oh, that's so nice. Yeah. It made my day. I needed something to make my day because I'm still sick. I thought I had the flu. My nephew, the doctor, said, no, I don't think, over the phone. He said, I don't think you have the flu because I had the flu and this is how you'd feel. And he was right. I had a stomach bug. And it's a week later, and I'm still fighting the bug, I guess. I'm not back to normal. I'm on probiotics now, hoping that that's going to be helpful. But then again, I could use a stiff drink. the drink of the day or of the week should be... I was into this when I came home from New Orleans last year. Sazerac. You ever have a... Do you drink? I don't even know if you drink.
I stopped drinking many years ago, otherwise I wouldn't be talking to you now. But I did drink, but I drink an occasional glass of wine now, that's all.
I thought you were sort of abstemious. Well, anyway, I've always known about Sazerac, but I got really into it when we were in New Orleans, and I came home and I had to buy the ingredients. It's not so easy to find Peixo bitters, but I did get them. And you can buy online these days. And then the other difficult ingredient is absinthe, although you can buy absinthe these days. It was banned for a long, long time in the U.S., and the substitute was something called Herbsaint. And I have a bottle here of Herbsaint. And what's, I don't know, sort of wasteful is that in this, when you make a Sazerac, you rinse a glass with Herbsaint or absinthe, and then you pour the drink in. But you don't actually drink much of the Herbsaint. It has an anise licorice flavor. And it adds flavor to the drink, but it doesn't add much alcohol. So I guess it's Sazerac season because tomorrow is Mardi Gras, Fat Tuesday. Wednesday is Lent. And on a little sidebar here, there's a plant that I'm always, I can't remember the Latin name, but in English it's called Lenten Rose. And I always track it because we have a lot of them growing in my neighborhood in Brooklyn. And especially in the Botanic Garden, there's a whole rock garden full of them. And, you know, this year they bloomed at least 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks, ahead of schedule. Everything is ahead of schedule. And I just talked to my friend Cecilia in Pestum, and she tells me that they are more than a month ahead of the season, the usual season. So there's your global warming, if anybody wants to deny that. But Lenten Rose, down the street from me, started blooming at least 2, if not 3 weeks ago. And there are already daffodils about to pop. Crocuses, they've been out for a week already. So even though it doesn't necessarily feel like Lent when it should be cold, it is starting on Wednesday. So it's interesting that even though Lent is a time when you're supposed to restrict your amount of fats and good things and have a little sacrifice for 40 days, is a time when there are a slew of recipes. In every Catholic country, they have special recipes just for Lent. So, you know, it's not exactly a fast time. But I'm going to wait a little bit before I do my Lent recipes. I have a few things that I like to make myself, Southern Italian things. For instance, this is not so much Lent, but Feast of San Giuseppe, which is March 19th, you make a bean soup using up all your old beans from the winter and adding in spring greens. I like to make it with borage, which in the south of Italy grows like a weed everywhere. And by now, you should be able to find some nice borage. certainly next week you will. And but you know, we don't have borage here in the States. You can grow it yourself, but it's not going to be coming up in February anyway. So you know, spinach, any greens you add at the end to this bean soup. The other thing for San Giuseppe, and I actually went to an Italian bakery yesterday, thinking I would find them already, is the Zeppole di San Giuseppe. Now, in Campania, Naples, and other places around the south, they call them zeppole, and it's basically a what we would call a French cruller. It's a puff pastry dough that's deep fried and then split. And if you're in Naples, it's filled with custard. If you're in Sicily, it could be filled with ricotta cream. Either way, they're sensational. There are baked zeppole di San Giuseppe, but I don't consider them the real deal. You have to have something fried. But anyway, it was too early. Not too early for Lenten Rose, but too early for zeppole di San Giuseppe at this particular Italian bakery. Although I think other ones, they might be having them already. Usually a week or two before the holiday, which is, as I said, the 19th of March, bakeries will start to make them. To me, it's something you don't want to miss. Just have one a year, you know. I've made them myself, and it's not hard to do, but it's a fuss. It's a big fuss, and you're deep frying, so, and it does take some technique. So I suggest that if you have a bakery that sells them, you try one. Or buy yourself by the way, Dunkin' Donuts, they have pretty good French crullers if you get there early in the day before they're sort of hardened up from sitting out. But that's like all their donuts, I got to say. But the French crullers are actually better than most other donuts at Dunkin' Donuts. And those are exactly Zeppole di San Giuseppe, except they're not filled. So you could buy a few Dunkin' Donuts French crullers and make yourself some thick pastry cream custard. Or you could actually make the pastry cream custard and then fold in some whipped cream to lighten it. And split the donuts, the crullers, and put away a Dutch word, cruller, and not at all French. And that would make a great, or cannoli cream, you know, with ricotta and powdered sugar. And if you want to add some nuts or chocolate chips to that, that's good too. By the way, the ones in Naples are always topped with a sour cherry, amarene. And you can buy those. And you can actually, Morello cherries are the same thing. So you can put a Morello cherry on top right from the preserve jar. So that's one thing for this time of the year. But I really am going to make a gumbo to celebrate Mardi Gras tomorrow. And in my book, Soup Suppers, I can add, this is my best-selling cookbook. After how many years now? After many years, it's still out there. And that's unusual. It's 1994, 26 years ago. It's been in print for 26 years. Well, there are three gumbo recipes in this book, because I love gumbo. And Soup Suppers is a book of main course soups and accompaniments to go with them. And I don't know, do you want to call gumbo a soup? I guess you could call gumbo a soup. And I have a shrimp gumbo, which is the one that I make most often, which is the one I will do for tomorrow. And then there's a chicken gumbo, less interesting to me. And then one that I love but don't make very often, which is a bean gumbo, but it does have a protein in it. It has ham. So cubes of ham and beans in the gumbo format. Very delicious. So shrimp gumbo is not hard to make, but somewhat time-consuming. And I like to make it with the base of shrimp shell broth, meaning I buy a couple of pounds of shrimp in the shells, shell them, and reserving the shells, refrigerate the shrimp until you're ready to cook them, and wash the shells briefly under cold running water. Just put them in a strainer or a colander, and then you put the shells in a pot with 7 cups of water. So that's the shells from 2 pounds of shrimp plus 7 cups of water, and you bring it to a boil. Excuse me, I do have a lot of gas still residual from this stomach problem. So excuse me if I sound gassy. Brent, and you boil it. You just boil the shrimp shells for a good half hour to 45 minutes. You're going to be amazed at how much flavor they give to that water. And you now have shrimp shell broth, which is a great basis for your gumbo. Now, of course, the essential element of gumbo is a roux, R-O-U-X, French word. And it means flour cooked in fat. I use oil. I use plain old vegetable oil. And for a half a cup of vegetable oil, you're going to use a whole cup of flour. And you stir that together, and you put it over medium heat, or even medium-low heat, because you don't want to burn this. You just want to brown it. And you cook, stirring the flour regularly. It's going to take close to an hour. So I said this is time-consuming. But once you've got that done, you've got it made. And fact is, you can make your roux one day and do the gumbo the next day. And in New Orleans, I noticed in grocery stores, they actually sell roux in jars. You don't even have to make it yourself. You can buy a jar full of roux. I've never seen that here, but I wouldn't be surprised if some specialty shop sold roux in a jar. But it's not, you know, it's an hour, but you're in the kitchen, you're doing other things. Fact is, you can put the roux up and keep an eye on it while you're boiling your shrimp broth. So while the roux is cooking, you're going to chop up all your vegetables. Now, what they call the Cajun Creole Trinity is onion, celery, and green pepper. I add garlic. So you want a large onion, about a cup and a half of chopped onion, and about a cup and a half of celery. I dice everything nicely because it's going to show up in the soup at the end. And then a large green pepper, also diced, and that will be about a cup probably of green pepper, and three large cloves of garlic crushed. So while while your broth is working, while your roux is working, you can do all that work. And strain the shrimp broth. You should have 6 cups. If you don't have 6 cups, add a little water. It's okay. Just plain old water. And as soon as your roux is the right color, which to say a mahogany brown, add your onion, celery, and pepper all diced up. Now, this will turn the roux a deep mahogany brown. As soon as you add these moist vegetables, the whole thing changes. And so add that in, stir them into the roux, cover the pot, and let the vegetables sweat. This is over medium-low heat for about 10 minutes, stirring a couple of times along the way. Then add your garlic, because you don't want to overcook the garlic. Add the garlic and cook that covered for another 2 more minutes. And now you're going to add the rest of your ingredients, which consists of a can of tomatoes, 28-ounce can of tomatoes. I like to cut them into pieces, but you can also just crush them with your hand as you're adding them to the pot. Of course, all the juice in the can as well. A teaspoon of dried thyme. You want to use fresh thyme, you're going to have to use more. 1 tablespoon of Worcestershire sauce. A couple, 3 bay leaves, depending on how spicy you like yours, anywhere from 1/4 to 1/2 teaspoon of cayenne pepper, ground cayenne pepper, and then black pepper as well, at least 1/2 teaspoon. And you turn the heat to high, bring that to a simmer, and stirring, cook it until it's all wonderfully smooth. Now, the roux, of course, is a thickening agent. However, after you've cooked roux for a while, which you have here, it doesn't thicken as much as, for instance, a white roux. You know, when you're making white sauce, the most you need is 2 tablespoons of flour per cup. So in this case, even though it's a cup of flour and a lot of oil, it doesn't amount to that much. So turn the heat to medium and or low, and let it simmer for about 1/2 hour. And you've got a really, I said, of course, you've got to add back the shrimp stock. You've got a really delicious gumbo. But so far, there's nothing in it. It's just sauce. So what you do is add about I don't know, you know, scallions, I don't know, about half a cup, three quarters of a cup of chopped scallions. Use the white and the green, and about maybe a half a cup of chopped parsley. And at the very end, of course, and you can make this all ahead. And when you heat the gumbo, you can add the shelled shrimp, which you have not cooked yet. There's still raw shrimp that you stashed in the refrigerator. Because the shrimp only take a very few minutes to cook. I've been playing with shrimp lately, and I must say the other day I made rather large shrimp, and I just boiled them, brought a pot of water to the rolling boil, added my shrimp, and they were done in 2.5 minutes. I let another one stay in for 3 minutes just to see, and you know what? 2.5 minutes for these big shrimp, it was like, I don't know, 16th of a pound, was plenty of time. So you don't need a lot of time for the shrimp. And then you serve it with the rest, with, you know, some more chopped scallions, some more chopped parsley. I always like to have mine with rice. And if you go to New Orleans, almost always gumbo is served with rice. And so I like to put a big, big scoop of rice in the middle of a bowl, pour the gumbo all around it, and garnish it with the greens, the parsley and the scallions. On the side, you can put some hot sauce for those who really want it hot. I had a laugh when we always think of Tabasco sauce as being the Louisiana hot sauce. Well, I get to New Orleans, and they're all putting their nose up in the air at Tabasco because they like Crystal hot sauce. They tell me it's way more authentic than Tabasco. But you know what? I like Tabasco. Whatever you like, whatever hot sauce you like. Not one of those heavily flavored ones, though, that I get from Mexico. Those are a little aggressively flavored. We want mainly heat here. And that's it. That's just great. And by the way, as I said, you could do it over 2 days. You could do it over 3 days. You could make your roux one day, because that's the attention-getting long process, and put it all together and then put it in the refrigerator. It actually will improve. And then the next day, bring it to a boil and add your shrimp.
You know,
by the way, you can add many other different seafood, you know, scallops, crab, crayfish if you can get them, things like that.
The thing about a roux, Arthur, is I think that most people who aren't really, really, really decent cooks screw up roux. And I think that's the hardest part of this whole thing.
It is. You have to pay attention,
yeah,
because at any second it could suddenly start turning dark, which you don't want. I mean, you do want, but you want it to happen gradually.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's a good dish for if you want to have a Mardi Gras party. It's probably too late to order a king's cake, but may I say that as somebody who's ordered king's cakes many times, they're not really something you should desire. You could go to your favorite bakery and buy a Danish ring and then drizzle some colored sugar glaze on top, and you'll have the same thing as a king's cake. It's sort of a mediocre Danish.
Hey, I have a roux question. Back to
a roux question.
A roux question.
Not a rude question, but a roux question.
R-O-U-X question.
A roux, yeah, let's like folks, like fox, as in F-A-U-X. Yes, my roux question is, when you are just doing basic cooking, basic ABCs of cooking, where does roux when do you learn to make a roux?
When do you learn to make roux?
Yeah, like how basic is it? Because I think
I don't know the answer to that.
All right, it's
very basic.
Let me
do it because we were doing, it's about time I did another day of basic cooking stuff.
All right, because
the thing is this: for most people, I don't see a lot of people making white sauce. For me, it's prime for macaroni and cheese.
Right.
You make a roux, in that case, a white roux. I would say 2 tablespoons of flour per cup of milk. In this case, milk. If it's milk, it's a bechamel, and if it's broth, it's velouté, which a French word. And by the way, they use the same word in Italian, velutata. So it depends on the liquid, what you call it. I don't know. It seems to me pretty basic. So
I learned
what
I had to make a cheese souffle.
What you're cooking,
right?
You want to make if you come from the South, you probably learn to make roux when you're 5 years old.
Exactly.
Because this, for instance, chicken fried steak comes with cream gravy, or chicken and waffles can be with cream gravy, and cream gravy is bechamel. So, and that's. You need a roux.
That's why I mentioned that.
Only cook the flour for 2 or 3 minutes, mainly to get the raw taste off the flour, and then you add your liquid. And by the way, if you add hot, most recipes will tell you to add hot liquid to the hot roux, and that's because you have less likely to lump up if it's hot and hot. What I do is, because I'm too lazy to wash another pot that I heated broth or milk in, is I take the roux off the heat, and once it's stopped bubbling, which only takes a couple minutes, you can then beat in with a whisk or, I would suggest a whisk, the liquid, and then you won't get any lumps, and you don't have to dirty another pot to heat the liquid. So that's about it. It's not a complicated thing, but in the case of gumbo, making a brown roux, it requires some attention. A white roux, not so much attention because it's only going to be on the fire for 2 or 3 minutes. And by the way, once you add your liquid, the maximum thickening of that sauce will be at the moment it starts simmering. And you'll see, it suddenly will thicken up when it starts simmering. And then you should let it continue to simmer for at least a few minutes, again, to cook the flour that you added in and get the roux tasting like, not like flour. So that's that. By the way, the other day, I wasn't making roux. What was I making? I don't know. As I said, not only is my stomach bad, but my head has been affected by it.
Well, heads get affected by
whatever
stomachs.
Whatever bug I have. And I could barely think of food for days. Really, I didn't eat for 4 days. Just the thought of it made me sick. And then all of a sudden, all I wanted to eat was fruit. I don't know what got into me. I love fruit, and I have to have fruit every day. But this is all I wanted to eat was fruit. So I went out and bought this enormous bag of Caracara oranges. I'm still working on it. I gave some to my next-door neighbor. But this is the season for citrus, as you well know. And I was craving citrus. Now, I don't know what that was about. It couldn't have been good for my stomach, acid.
Yeah, but when your body wants something, when you're craving something.
Exactly. My body wanted citrus. So I go to a local restaurant here, and they have everybody's got, special cocktails these days, most of which I have no interest in whatsoever. But this one sort of appealed to me because it was based on Amaro, Italian bitters. In this case, Ramazzotti, which is a Sicilian bitters. And I ordered it, and the other base was grapefruit juice. And it made me rediscover grapefruit juice. Now, I haven't drunk grapefruit juice, or eaten grapefruits for that matter, in several years, if not many years, because I take a statin, a drug that reduces your bad cholesterol. Not that I have bad cholesterol, I don't actually, but my nephew, the cardiologist, keeps saying it's prophylactic for many things. So he had me on this years ago, but they warn you not to drink grapefruit juice or eat grapefruit when you're on a statin. And I wondered if this was still a good advice. Brian is my nephew. Brian says that if you have a statin, unless you're on mega doses, which I'm not, which most people are not, if you take a statin in the morning, no problem with the grapefruit in the evening, or vice versa, depending on how you take your statin. But I did a little research, and it ends up you would have to consume an awful lot of grapefruit juice or grapefruits to make a difference with your statin. Most people are not going to have 2 quarts of grapefruit juice in a day. So what I did was I gave into my craving, and I bought a pint bottle of freshly squeezed grapefruit juice. I must say it was very delicious. But I watered it down. And so I only drank literally one cup a day. And I had, and over a long period with a lot of water added to it, which is good because it is rather, you know, sharp, grapefruit juice. I was a little scared about that. But my body was saying, citrus, citrus, citrus. Yeah. I also make a lot of lemonade.
Well, I've just always, and again, I don't take a statin, so I don't know this about grapefruit juice, but I am a pretty severe grapefruit juice addict.
I love grapefruit juice.
You can't drink grapefruit juice with statins.
Now you can't. Now they say you can, except that you shouldn't have it together.
Okay.
You know, don't down your statin with a glass of grapefruit juice.
But I always said, because I've been taking statins and I've gotten rid of most. I'm down to a real weak one now. But anyway, I always said to my doctor, what's the difference between orange juice and grapefruit juice?
What's the difference between what and what?
Orange juice and grapefruit juice, if it's a citrus fruit.
Oh, no, no. It's not it's not the citric acid at all. There are enzymes in grapefruit juice.
It increases the simvastatin.
That stress out your kidneys. Yeah. When you combine with statins. I don't really know the mechanism here. I do know, however, that it's a kidney issue. And if you do take statins and you do drink grapefruit juice, be aware if you get muscle cramps or joint aches, that could be a sign of the toxicity of the two together. But most people don't consume anywhere near the amount of grapefruit juice you need to consume to interfere with the statins and your body's absorption of it. So it's not a non-issue, but it's something you should be aware of it if you take a statin, but it's nothing to be scared of, says Brian.
All right.
Who does, by the way, take a statin and does drink grapefruit juice?
There you go. Nothing better than having a doctor who does it. Just say, you know, my doctor does it, or
My nephew the doctor.
I hope you feel
better.
You know,
I always say that, you know, he's a prolific reader. He always has been. But nowadays, I find he knows a lot about medical stuff that isn't even in his field. And I asked him why recently, and he says, well, when you're an anesthesiologist, you spend a lot of time monitoring people, but you can be distracted. You can read at the same time. So he reads all this medical, you know, update stuff while he's... I mean, he even has conversations in the operating room. So, I don't know what all that's about. My niece, who is a surgeon, in fact, says, oh, you would be shocked at what happens in operating rooms. The music they listen to, the conversations, they're very distracted, but whatever.
Yep. All right.
All right.
All right, so now I'm going to go nurse my belly.
Okay.
I'm not sure how.
Have more probiotic.
What was that?
Have more probiotic. It's magic.
Oh, I'm taking probiotics now.
Yeah, good.
Right. I really wanted to sort of binge on kimchi. It's a probiotic.
I would hold
but
off
it stinks up the whole house, and Bob can't take it.
All right.
Feel better.
Better a pill.
All right. Take care of that.
I hope to be in full stomach gear by next week.
All right.
You did a fine job in half gear.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Have a great week, everybody. It's going to be like spring.
Yep.
Until it starts getting freezing again. Goodbye.
Bye.
Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, here on Robin Hood Radio.